Hello and welcome to Booktopia On. I am Bronwyn.
I'm John.
I'm Sarah.
And today we're talking about book awards.
So, the question is, with art, it's always been a problem. Because a lot of people who are writing aren't writing thinking, I'm going to writing for to win an award. I'm going to win the Miles Franklin, this little guy. It's not something you aim for as an artist. You just hope that someone's going to read it to end and actually enjoy it or understand what you're going on about.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, you don't want to write for a specific criteria. Like, if an award is saying, we look for this, that, and the other, and you try and fit your story into that, God knows what you'll get. Like, you just want to write and see how it goes and let it flow, but sometimes they just fit anyway.
Do you think, as a reader, does it influence you a lot? Do you immediately go and rush to read something that's won a prize?
It helps sort, I'd say. So, yeah. Like, working in a bookshop, it's much easier for somebody who has no time, who doesn't have much time to read, wants a book that is going to work, if they're going to pay the money over, that it's going to be worthwhile. Sometimes an award can give that confidence to actually, I'm going to buy that one because obviously it won the Booker or it won the CBCA. It must be good, so I'll do that. It's a shortcut in a way. It's not always right, but it's sometimes handy.
Yeah, I view it kind of like it's handy, especially when I'm recommending books to people who don't read that often.
Yes.
And I've told them what it's about, and I can sense that they're not like super enthused. Like I was trying to sell someone, like convince them that they really needed to read Manhattan Beach. And I told them a bit about it. I had that feeling that I wasn't getting through. They weren't looking like very interested. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, and the author Jennifer Egan won the Pulitzer a few years back. And then that was the thing that pushed them over the edge.
I'm the same.
So like, it's like I don't know anything about wine, right? But when I'm buying wine, I just look and see if there's medals on it because I assume then that it's
other people
okay.
Have approved.
this is what happens though, that in the wine industry, they just make up medals now and just chuck them over the top. This is what's happening in books. There have been some books that have had little golden circles on them, which say something that the publisher just says. Like, it's not even an award.
It's not even an award.
But it looks like an award winner. From afar, and it gives
that's
people confidence.
So clever.
Yeah, but it's one of those things now that having a little sticker, and that as soon as the Booker is announced and the winner's announced, the publisher does a reprint and prints Booker winner on the front. It has an effect.
Well, as someone I read, right, but for someone who doesn't drink wine, which is me, I'll drink alcohol of any kind. I when I have to buy alcohol for someone or something, I go whoa. And I can imagine that would be the kind of sensation for other people who don't read very often, walking into a bookstore and seeing all this choice.
And everything looks like
everything looks the same.
And I go for when I'm in a physical bookstore, I go for the staff recommendations.
Yeah.
I always look
I go for the classics. Often draws my eye because they're usually singled out. And
solid gold hits.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've lasted a few centuries, you must be good, right?
Exactly.
Something we've brought up a couple of times in this podcast over the months is, there are literary prizes and there are genre prizes, like crime will have a prize, romance will have a prize. There's even things like the first novel, debut novel prize, But there's a lot of stuff out there that is really, really successful. There's no prize for. Like there's sort of the best-selling popular fiction stuff. Is there an action book prize? Is there a contemporary women's fiction prize? Is there, the real romance prize, and romance will probably come under the romance nights. They have both the publishers and the writers have one, and the romance readers, which Booktopia sponsors, has their own award night as well. So there are certain genres who are like flush with awards,
and
there
some
are other
have
areas.
Just one.
You got nothing. Literature has so many. Like, you got the Nobel, you got the Pulitzer, you got the Booker, you got the Dublin Prize, you've got the Commonwealth Prize, you've got the premiers, all the different premiers around Australia have their own prizes. You've got the Prime Minister's Award. There's all these awards for literature.
I wonder why. I suppose because awards in themselves are like supposed to carry this prestige, and there's this idea that literature is the only prestigious form of writing. So is that why, do you think? Like, it's kind of logical, I guess, that there would be more literary prizes than genre. I don't like it. I'm not saying there should be.
That's why I think too. I mean, I don't agree with it either. But
like, I always pay attention to the Hugo Award.
Hugo, so the sci-fi and fantasy.
I always want to know who wins that. I think the CBCA awards are really good. Like, it's really great for if you're, you know, I find that more people than not ask recommendations for kids' books than for what they want to read. Like, I feel like everyone's, maybe it's just like that I know so many people with young kids at the moment, but like everyone's after what books should my children be reading.
Because, yeah, you know what you like, right? But if you ask, well, what did your kid like? Because I'm not sure what my child, who isn't a whole other person, will actually enjoy or what's been successful with kids across
yeah,
the world.
And just when you've got, I don't know, I just think that the CBCA is really good at sort of saying, here's the ones we all agree are valuable for your children.
We know it's round round because the sales just go, like a book may have sold quite poorly and then gets on, wins or is nominated or is highly commended on the CBCA and suddenly it's a bestseller.
Yeah.
Like it takes, it's almost like everyone's waiting, librarians are waiting, teachers are waiting, parents are waiting, everyone's waiting, and then they get the nod of it's a good book from
you may buy this for your children and your libraries and your schools.
And they do. They do. Nice.
It's pretty great to watch. Do you think is that an effect across the board? Like, do some awards have more of a sale effect? Like, if something wins the Nobel Prize, does it sell more than if it wins the Pulitzer?
The Nobel Prize has nothing for us. I mean, the Nobel Prize is a weird one as well because often they'll dig up something that is not even in print in Australia. You know, someone, an obscure poet from Eastern Europe wins one year and there's nothing in print in the English language.
People can't even get it.
Yeah, you can't even get it. So that's no good for sales at all. I mean, Bob Dylan won last year. And you could buy lots of books by Bob Dylan. We didn't see anything.
Yeah.
Any rise in it wasn't last year, it was the year before.
But the Booker?
The Booker definitely has an effect, but again, it comes down to the book. Like, it is interesting. My brain's gone. Hilary Mantel, that was just insane. Julian Barnes did really well. In Australia, the Richard Flanagan, when he won, wow. But again, it sometimes it just doesn't fly. People don't. They can all nod and go, that's really brilliant. I'm not going to read it.
Yeah, weird how that happens sometimes.
Yeah, because the Miles Franklin's like that. Miles Franklin's going to be so cold sometimes. Sometimes they'll award it to someone and nothing happens at all.
That's how I see fashion, you know, when you see a fashion show and they walk down the runway and you're like, beautiful, beautiful, but I would never actually wear it. It's not practical. And for most people, it doesn't, or for a lot of people, it doesn't relate. It's not their style. And it might be the same for, like, I look at, like, I'm not one of these people that when a shortlist comes out, I don't tend to have the desire to go and buy the shortlist and read them. But some people do. Mm. Do you, John?
No, but I know people who just want to read every single one on a shortlist so that they're there. And just like with the Academy Awards, people want to see the movies listed for the best picture. Yeah, and so they're there on the night going, oh, I know which one's going to win. Or
well, they champion someone, and then if they don't win, they feel...
Yeah.
And they were cheating.
I'd love to do that. I just... Usually when the shortlist comes out...
You don't have time to read 8 books, or
I will look. I'm always interested to see what they are, and I do kind of consider: will I read that? Will I not read that? Which one do I think will win? That kind of thing. But yeah, I'd love to be. I mean, it would be kind of great to just have a reading list based on awards.
I think so. Well, I do this with movies. You know, the whole 100 movies you should see before you die. A lot of really amazing classics, black and whites, are in there. And you could absolutely do that with books too, you know, literary prize winners over the years. And, I mean, imagine the kinds of books you could read.
Well, John wrote a book that has a lot of... You don't want to talk about it, do you?
there are awesome writers who've just never won an award in their whole goddamn career.
Nice deflection.
And it'd be terrible to have them not being read because they didn't win anything. And sometimes they're just not fitted for awards. They're not that kind of book.
Yeah.
And there's so many of those kind of writers out there.
But I think there's so many. I mean, realistically, there's so many books out there and so few prizes that your chances of winning are so slim. And I think that being published and getting sales and having fans and readers, I mean, personally for me, it would be enough.
But you know? When there are so many awards that cover so many areas and there's like a blind spot,
yes,
then
different.
You want to have those books have their sort of arena. And
I remember when the Stella. Was announced and they were just going to hold an award for women, and the first winner gave away the money, like gave away to the shortlisters, and they're like, and so they were shared it. But ever since, I mean, the, sort of in the acceptance speech, there's sort of been discussion around this. Some prize money allows a writer to write another book. Like, there's no money in writing for the vast majority of writers have other jobs. And so, prize winning in any form, whether it's a $5,000 check or if it's $50,000, has a big effect on an author and gives them either a few weeks off to write. They might get invited to writers' retreats, but they can't really afford to take time off work. But if they get a little bit of money, they go, "Oh, I can afford this now," and off they go. There's a whole range of things that's kind of free. But some winning like the Booker, the way that, I don't know if you saw it recently in the Guardian, but they interviewed all these Booker winners about what it did to their life because of the 50 years of Booker coming up, and some of them it ends up you can and they warn other writers that you can end up just being on the circuit as the Booker winner for a year or two, just going around the world, being flown from here to there to go to this festival and talk with these people and visit this bookstore and blah, blah, and not write and just do that. And others, they say, enjoy it while it's there, but rush back to your room and keep writing. But the thing is, that money is big money. Like, not only is the prize big, but you suddenly go from being a best-selling author of a kind to understanding what best-selling means and then having money roll in. Some of these ones sell, 500,000 around the world. And that's massive for an author, a literary author, who may generally sell a few thousand. So some of these awards actually change lives and also enable writers to be the best they can because it gives them the time to think and stop and write properly.
Not to mention the ego boost.
Yeah, the ego boost, because you're sitting in the dark for so long.
It wonders for the spirit.
Yeah.
So do you have thoughts on, because it's 50 years of the Booker and they're going to award, the 50-year one.
Yeah.
Do you have are you going to put your money on one? Or?
I have a soft spot for the English patient, so.
I was actually hoping the same.
Yeah. But what is nice, when you look down the Booker list, and it's not the same as a lot of other lists, look down and they've been pretty good at picking these writers and these books. Most of the writers have gone on to write other wonderful books afterwards. So their hit rate is pretty high.
That's one from each decade, right, of the prize?
No, I'm just talking about if you look over the whole...
Oh, the whole history of the whole history. Prize, yeah.
They're not just, occasionally they'll pick out a book that stands out in someone's career and they never wrote anything else or never wrote anything as good. But generally, they pick people who do go on to just continue to write brilliant books, book after book, for year after year.
But is that a knock-on effect of winning? Like, are you more likely to go on and have a great career if you've had this amazing prize come into your life with all the money and all the prestige that comes with it?
We'd have to have, what do they call it, when you're doing science and they have two lines of tests, one
alpha and beta.
Yeah, so, we'll have to have a line of people who'd never won the award and see how many of those actually stumbled on.
John does science.
Blind testing. Yeah, I don't know. But, how can you really tell on those kinds of things? I would suspect, yes. I mean, from then on, you've got Booker Prize winner on your book.
Yeah.
And that helps sales. Yeah.
And so many more people have read one of your books than they would have otherwise and are likely to read you again.
Yeah. Because that does change things. I mean, the Booker is one of those ones that does generally end up in people's book clubs, reading groups.
Exactly. You buy it for gifts and things like that. And I mean, what Sarah said before, when people who come to me and ask for book recommendations, being their bookish friend, I'll firstly ask what genres they're interested in, and then I'll look at the ones that either I know are best-selling from work or have won prizes, and often one I cite is the
it's Emily a safe bet for a recommendation, isn't it?
Yeah, the Emily
especially Sinclair when people say, "Oh, I like reading all kinds of things," and they won't.
Yeah,
they won't pin down you're desperately asking them what's a favorite author or some book that you liked once in your life.
No, really fast.
But on the flip side of it, some of these literary awards actually are death. Like, you could be selling quite well, not people not knowing that you're literature.
Like what one?
Well, you can be selling quite well not knowing people. People don't know your literature, right?
Uh-huh.
And then suddenly you win Booker Prize or you win the Pulitzer. And suddenly for a lot of readers, oh, that's going
to
be hard.
Has that happened to someone that you can think of?
Well, definitely. I can't think of anyone immediately, but I know that working in a shop, that people won't read lit. Like, it's hard to get them to read lit. Oh, no, it's going to be difficult. Oh, it's going to require
looking for a fun, yeah. Like,
and they'll say, look, I haven't got time to read throughout the year. And then when they're finally, and they're reading all the time, right? I haven't got time to read during the year. And then when they finally get a holiday read, like they finally get time on the beach. Oh no, I just want something light. And they go, this is the time. You should be reading the hardest books because you got all that time on the beach. But no, so they read light through the year and they read light on the holiday.
Isn't it funny how the people who say, I don't have time to read, are usually the ones that are reading, just not as much as they want to.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
People who genuinely don't want to read or aren't interested in reading just tell you that. They're like, I don't like reading.
Yeah.
But then a lot of people are saying, I wish I was a reader, but I'm not. And I'm like, really? I don't understand that sensation.
I bet you they're reading. They just don't want to talk about what they're reading.
Have you ever met anyone who is only reading like prize winners?
Oh.
Because they used to come into my shop, they would come in and they're reading through the Nobel Prize or they're reading through the Booker list.
No, but it's such a good challenge. Mm. Like, wow, I would love to do that. I mean, I need an extra life, but like...
These are often people who come to reading later in life and they just want...
the best of the best.
Yeah, they just want the best of the best and they just want to have a path to walk down.
Yeah.
So they can then get themselves organised and not have to worry.
Like, people love lists because, again, there's so much, too much choice.
What a cool thing.
And you want people to just say, here you go, read this list and you'll be right.
I'd love to read through all the Booker winners. Like, I think that would be...
Sarah's next challenge.
I just committed to 50 books.
50? So sometimes, didn't they... Was that just the Mars? They sometimes hand out to two? Or was that just the Mars?
Have they done two a year? There might be more than 50.
Just one prize or all the prizes, Sarah?
Like, I can't do the short list for every year. That would be the rest of my life.
I do the Hugo. I'll read all the sci-fi ones.
All right, that sounds like a plan.
What are we
doing?
No, I would not. I
strike that. We didn't say this on air.
Let's read. I can commit to reading the ones nominated for the 50-year prize.
Hmm.
I'd like to read. Some of them I've read, and I'll just reread them. There you go.
Well, before coming into the podcast, I drew your attention to Sinclair Lewis, one of my favorite writers, who was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for Arrowsmith and said no.
Why you would say no.
Because you're a badass, amazing person who's like, I don't believe in this prize.
Yeah, well, it's like, am I any better than this book here? What ridiculous statement to make that we're in competition in any way? But also, I don't trust why it's been. I don't trust the people who put it together. I don't think their motives were right. I don't think that books or literature should be sort of. Put together in this ideology around.
And there was actually, and it's interesting, John sent me his letter of rejection, which was pretty awesome. And I meant to, before this podcast, but
memorize it.
Again, run out of time, or print it out, or do some research into it, whether it's changed. But it was the Pulitzer Prize that he turned down. And he quotes the, like, criteria for winning the Pulitzer Prize at that time.
Mm.
And it is pretty, like, restrictive.
Miles has to be about Australia and looking at Australian values and all that sort of stuff.
So here is where Cynical Bron comes in. Do we think that he thought, hey, by rejecting it, I'll cause such...
But he'd already won the upheaval, or had he already...
That people will want to read it because I rejected it.
No, he wasn't like that.
No.
Because you don't know what people are like.
He was a critic of capitalism and American life at that time.
And he'd already won the Nobel Prize, hadn't he? Or did he win that later?
I don't know.
There's no timeline on this, but either before or after he rejected the Pulitzer Prize, he did win the Nobel Prize and accept it.
And it really pissed off Hemingway because he beat Hemingway too.
Interesting guy, sounds like.
Yeah, well, he's marvellous, absolutely marvellous. I recommend Main Street and Babbitt to everyone out there.
Babbitt. That's cute.
But there have been some controversies around prizes as well because... The Vogel or I think Miles as well. I think everyone got caught up in that Helen Demidenko book that she said was based on her Ukrainian background and heavily lent on her family's story throughout the war. It was all lies. And it was all just fiction, like brilliant fiction. And she won, and then it all came out and she was sort of a
And it sort of tarnishes the award in a way.
Yeah, in a way, it kind of does. Yeah, there have been things like that. But there's also things like Frank Morehouse, one of Australia's great writers. He had this trilogy coming out, and the Grand Days and the rest, but they were set overseas. And can't win Australia's greatest prize because it's not set in Australia. You know?
Which does seem crazy.
It does seem crazy. Yeah, because I understand why. Yeah, we talked in our Australian podcast why this was set up in the first place is because the Cultural Cringe podcast, because we wanted to support Australia in this world where everyone was obsessed with the US and the UK. But on the other hand, if you're an Australian and you're writing, shouldn't you be allowed to be in up there? I mean, Hannah Kent should be up for the Miles, but she wrote about Iceland and then Ireland.
We just need another award.
We need many more.
The Miles Franklin does what the Miles Franklin does, and we just have another one. But because these prizes come into being because they have a kind of goal for what they want to support.
Mm.
And it's like that prize, the Staunch Prize that they're doing for the crime fiction that doesn't feature any violence against women.
Yeah.
And how on the face of it, that seems like such a great idea. But then Sophie Hannah came out and was like, well, I would never be able to be nominated for this award because there's violence against women in every one of her books. But isn't she someone who we would all agree writes books that sort of say good things about? I don't know how that, you know what I mean? Like, her take on violence against women is obviously great, right? No one's saying that writing She's a book about violence against women, it doesn't promote violence against women. Like, oftentimes it tears down. Yeah. Like, and how can you sort of try and change the world by not writing about the thing that you're trying to change? I don't know.
You're right. And then this kind of blanket censorship is kind of idiotic.
You've got to tackle it head on, right?
Yeah. Don't ignore it and hope it goes away.
Yeah. So the prize should be for the book that best kind of comments on violence against women, not one that completely takes it out. Yeah. Because then you're almost writing science fiction.
Look at the stats right now. Violence against women is high. You know,
exactly.
If you're just going to ignore that as a writer, especially a crime writer, it's just idiotic.
It's strange. But at the same time, I'm so interested to read what gets nominated for that award. So, like, it's a cool challenge in a way.
Mm.
I don't know if it will achieve what they want it to achieve, but you'll certainly end up with some books that don't have any victimization or beating of women in, which has got to be nice change, if nothing else.
There's also... going on a weird angle is the Bad Sex Award.
That is brilliant.
I've never heard of this until today.
It's a bit mean because often they'll pull out a sex scene from a literary novel and the sex is not meant to be erotic or sexy in any way. It's just meant to describe the characters and give characterization and the like, or even some sort of turning point in books. But some of them, taken out of context, they are hysterical. They're so bad.
I don't know. I think I'm a fan of the fade to black because, reading sex scenes can be a little, awkward.
I don't know. I think sometimes the fade to black is as jarring as a bad sex scene because you're just like, oh.
True, but it's a reality. So, you know, a lot of times it needs to be included if it's part of the
story. Some stories have sex in them. They just do.
Yeah. Shocking.
Some lives do too, you know.
Only some, though.
But, you know, some of the stuff they pull out for the awards, and every year they do it. How long did you say they've been doing it?
Since 1993, and I'd never heard of this until today. I think it's hilarious.
Okay, so they win money.
No. Just a claim.
It's kind of like a Razzie award, right?
That would be weird. Here's some money. Yeah. Take a course. Learn about
sex. It's kind of a nice way of doing a bad writing award. You know, that's...
Yeah. And then there was that other one, which was an award for the strangest book title.
That's bizarre.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And do yourself a favour and go and look at them. Some of them were so hilarious. One of them was like...
We can hold our own one here.
I mean, yeah, we come across some odd...
Like, we've got millions of books on Booktopia, and when you... randomly looking up something else, sometimes you mistype something and you get this result. Like, what the
things that get published.
And since there's no limit, people complain about not being able to get published. We've got another problem. There seems to be too much getting published.
So much. One of the ones that was nominated on that is that famous book. It's in a lot of like online lists about like strange books and stuff. It's that How to Avoid Big Ships. Have you seen
How to Avoid book, Big Ships?
How to Avoid Big Ships is the title. I'm just going to.
Is it metaphor? On it.
I don't know.
Or is it serious? Maybe you see a large ship coming your way. Move out of the way. Someone should have said that to the iceberg in Tasmania. I mean, what? That makes no sense.
There was another one that was the best in lesbian horse stories, which I lesbian read to be. Stories. I thought it makes it sound like it would be about lesbian horses, but it's just a like lesbian love stories, and somehow horses are
involved. Oh, I thought you said horses.
Which is awesome, yeah. But when you read it the first time, you're like, wait, what?
Lesbian horses. Well, that's interesting.
Interesting either way, really.
So there are some strange prizes out there, and not the ones, and then there's some voids where we really need one.
Have you ever been, as a reader, you know, you've seen a book that has a stamp on it saying it's won something that you know that you've been influenced?
It doesn't influence me that much.
You're so free-spirited.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's never going to – it would never detract me from reading a book, but I would never pick up a book purely because it had won an award. I guess I just go where my interest takes me. If there's an award there, then I'm extra keen. I don't know.
I think if there's an award on it and you read it and you enjoy it, it's the kind of like, yeah, now I understand why that book. And it's kind of like a like validation almost.
And it does prompt curiosity. Like when a book, even if you haven't been interested in a book, if it does win, like especially the Booker or something, and you haven't read it and you could never imagine why it would be interesting, then the fact that it won might cause you to go there just out of curiosity.
I'm going to say, just before we wind this up, Michelle Legrette's a better win than Miles this year.
Yeah.
I'm just putting that down.
Agreed.
I agree. That's and my mum also agrees. Just put it out there. Well, thanks for joining us, everyone, and we'll catch you next Wednesday at 11 a.m.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.